Welcome to the Day One Podcast. For more information about this weekly program featuring outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, visit our website at dayone.org.
I'm Peter Wallace, and this is a Day One Conversation with the Reverend Dr. Lillian Daniel. Since 2004, Lillian has been senior minister of the First Congregational Church, United Church of Christ, of Glen Ellyn, Illinois. Earlier, she served 8 years as the senior minister of the Church of the Redeemer, United Church of Christ, in New Haven, Connecticut. She is an author, frequent contributor to the Christian Century and many other publications, and co-host for Chicago's weekly interfaith television program, 30 Good Minutes. Lillian, thanks for talking with us.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
The church you serve has been around for more than 100 years, but it's refreshingly contemporary. How do those two aspects go together at First Congregational?
Well, the Congregational churches have a rich history that goes back to the Puritans coming over here in search of religious freedom and tolerance. And I think that's a very modern idea and very refreshing to folks. We have a saying in our tradition that God is still speaking, meaning that there's always more light to come out of Scripture. And so that really very traditional idea is an idea that people find very refreshing in the church today.
You've been involved in the United Church of Christ's identity effort, the God is Still Speaking movement. Tell us about that.
That's a remarkable movement where we were trying as a mainline denomination to get the word out about who we were, because we felt like we were one of the church's best kept secrets, and that there were a lot of people out there who had been injured by the church or hurt by the church or felt unwelcomed by the church. And we are a church that welcomes all people, and the word wasn't out. So we had these television ads that had a very edgy feel to them, and they were really designed not to make our members happy, but to appeal to folks who were not already in the building. And it at first had some controversy associated with it because members weren't sure they wanted to be advertising and this kind of thing. But it's really been remarkable. And just in my own congregation, I've had a number of folks show up because of seeing those ads or hearing radio spots. Our church does ads at the train station, for example. And we hope that they're not tawdry or too commercial, but really just another form of spreading the gospel.
Mm. As I mentioned on the Day One radio program, I like the church beliefs listed on your website at firstconge.org. We talked about the first one on the program, everyone is a child of God. And as you say, the United Church of Christ is known for being welcoming and inclusive of all. I'm sure that can be interesting in practice, though, at times. Is it something you have to keep working on?
Absolutely. In my particular congregation in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, we're surrounded by a lot of Christian churches that are much more conservative and fundamentalist and have a literal interpretation of the Bible. So as a result, we get folks who come from those traditions and land on our doorstep. They're very eager for the message that we've got, but they're also baffled by it in many ways. On the other hand, we also have a lot of folks showing up the church who come, for example, a Unitarian background, and they're looking for something a little more traditional, a little more orthodox, and they bring a whole set of questions. And then the big thing in the United Church of Christ is we have so many people who were raised Roman Catholic, and they bring with them a rich cultural heritage and set of expectations around church. And so together we bring all these folks in a big mix, and we've got some very different visions about what church should or should not be.
And then the second belief, God is a part of our everyday lives. This speaks about the way God's word should pervade our lives. How does that happen?
Well, in the New England birthplace of Congregationalism, of my tradition, the churches were meeting houses, and they had these clear glass windows. If you ever go to New England and see our Congregational churches, they're so beautiful and historic, but they'll very seldom have stained glass windows. And the idea was that the light of the gospel was supposed to shine out into the world, but the concerns of the world were always supposed to be visible from inside the church. And so the idea that God is involved in our everyday lives makes so much sense to us in our Protestant tradition.
And then third, we are free to think of God in our own way. How far can we take that?
Well, that's the challenge, because when you are open and welcoming of folks from different traditions, it can slide into sort of a sloppy, make God into your own image kind of faith. And that's where I'm really grateful to have a tradition to fall back on. I like it that this is a denomination and tradition that goes back really into the early years of American history. And so it's not just what we want God to be. We do have a history and guiding principles and a cloud of witnesses who came before us that keep us from getting too loosey-goosey.
And then fourth, another world is possible. What sort of world would that be? And how do we change this world to get there?
That's definitely the church's commitment to justice, right? That's taken the hard stands on issues of gay rights, for example, a key issue for us right now that might not be popular in the rest of Christianity, but we are going to stand up early and often for those causes. Similarly, in history, standing up on the issue of civil rights or the ordination of women, for example, our tradition ordained the first woman in America.
And then fifth, it takes all kinds to make a world. The UCC values being together and serving God with all our differences. Sometimes that works in my experience, and other times it's very difficult and people react and move on to be where they're more comfortable. So how do we make this work?
Well, first, I don't think it's going to work for everybody. You know, we really believe that it's all right for people to be sitting next to each other in the pews of the church and have different theological beliefs. And when I, as the preacher, stand up and give my theology, I'm very much aware that I'm speaking for myself to the congregation, but not for the congregation. There are some people who just cannot tolerate that. Mm. They want a preacher who tells them what to believe, and they want the assurance that there are other people sitting next to them who believe the same thing. Lucky for them, there are lots of other churches they can go to.
We're talking with the Reverend Dr. Lillian Daniel, Senior Minister of First Congregational Church, United Church of Christ in Glen Ellyn, Illinois. Lillian, I love the story of your experience in the punk rock band, which you shared in one of your sermons on the Day One radio program. I know you majored in religion at Bryn Mawr College, but how did you decide to go to seminary? Were you raised in the church?
I was raised happily in the church, but when it came time to discern a call to ministry, I'd never laid eyes on a woman minister. I didn't know what to do with it. And I had this calling to go deeply into the academic world of religion. So I applied to Yale, sort of covering my bases that I could go either way. But I had a remarkable experience of going into the ordination process in the Episcopal Church and being turned down and being told that I had no gifts for the ministry whatsoever.
Wow.
And I took that very seriously and took it to heart and decided not to go to divinity school, even though I'd been accepted. I deferred. And I went to work at a small nonprofit agency in Washington, D.C., where there were some Baptist divinity school students from Howard Divinity School who asked me my story. And I told them that I had applied to divinity school, and they were doing their internships at this secular nonprofit. And I said, you know, how can you be doing your divinity school internship here at a secular nonprofit agency? I mean, this isn't the ministry. Mm-hmm. I've been taught that the ministry was presiding over the sacraments and also been told that I had no future in such a world. And they said, how is this not the ministry? How is caring for the homeless, caring for teenagers at risk, not the ministry? And they said, you need a wider definition of church. So they ended up coming back to me and saying, we've been praying for you, and God has told us you're meant to go to divinity school anyway. And really, on the strength of those prayers, I decided to go anyway. And it was there that I discovered this rich tradition of the congregational church.
And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. And by the way, just for the record, I've since met many wonderful Episcopal clergy who care about social justice and all those same things.
One issue many churches are dealing with is how to reach younger people in this high-tech, entertainment-oriented culture. What are your thoughts and experiences with that issue?
I think we make a lot of sloppy assumptions about what young people want from church. For a while, the assumption was that all young people want a band and words on screens to sing with. And I think what it turns out is that that was what some baby boomers wanted, and they're pretty sure that young people want it too. What I find among young people is a remarkable diversity. Some people really love to worship in a high-tech environment, but a lot of young people are turned off by that. Their worlds are so dominated by high-tech that they want to enter into a beautiful, warm, dark, historic building and experience God's mystery there.
It's interesting because there is quite a difference between those approaches. And it would seem to me that in this culture, a lot of people are hungering for a place of quiet holiness and community that is different from what the world would offer.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people are getting cynical about that sort of entertainment-driven megachurch model. A lot of the younger folks are suspicious of that because they see so much of that in the commercial world. And they really are interested, I think, in the practices of the faith. Less interested in points of doctrine, what do you believe? More interested in how does your belief change the way you live? How do you actually live differently because of this claim Christ has on you?
And you talked about your book, Tell It Like It Is, Reclaiming the Practice of Testimony, on the Day One programs. Give us another sense of how you would define testimony and how that works in the local congregation.
Testimony is a practice that a lot of Christian churches used to have, but most mainline churches have dropped it. But what it means is standing up in the context of worship, and I would argue for having it happen in your Sunday morning big worship service, having a layperson stand up and really talk about how they've experienced God in their lives. So in my tradition, where people are comfortable standing up and talking about, for example, a social justice issue, we had to say, what can you do in church that you couldn't do on NPR? You have to have God in this. But once you've got God at the center of it, your testimony could touch on a political issue or a justice cause or a family story, but it's got to have this experience of God at the center. What we find, by the way, is that a lot of people want to talk about the church and what the church has meant to them.
Do you plan this?
Yeah, in our case, we plan it. In traditions that use testimony more freely, it'll be a sort of come on down, almost an open mic sort of situation. And I think you have to introduce this practice in ways that are sensitive to your own tradition. And I knew that that would not fly in New England historic congregationalism, where I began to work with it. So we generally invite people beforehand, give them a chance to prepare what they're going to say, but I do not edit it or even ask to read it beforehand. I really like to experience it the way everyone else is.
And you are currently at work on another book. Tell us about that.
I'm really excited to be writing a book about the ministry with a tentative working title, This Odd and Wondrous Calling, The Private and Public Lives of Two Ministers. And I'm writing it with my friend, Martin Copenhaver, who is another senior minister of a large church in Wellesley, Massachusetts, in the United Church of Christ. But we're hoping this is a book that will cross denominational lines. And it's meant to be a very honest yet appreciative depiction of what it's like to be a minister. So we tell a lot of stories in the book. We try to interpret them theologically. It's the kind of book that you'd put in the hand of somebody in your church you thought might have that gift or that calling. But I also could imagine people who serve on vestries or church councils or pastoral relations committees reading this book in order to more deeply understand what the ministerial role is like.
I always like to ask our preachers if there are particular books or resources that they've found especially helpful in their own spiritual growth. What would you say?
You know, I would go back to sort of an old classic that I bet many people have mentioned to you before, but it's Richard Foster's book on prayer, and the title is Just Prayer. And what's great about that book is that he takes in each chapter a different form of prayer and explains it to you. But in reading the book, you're engaging in that form of prayer. So just reading that chapter feels prayerful. And then at the end, he has some exercises. And I love that book because I think we can all get stuck in a prayer rut, you know, even people who talk about prayer all the time. And I just open that and I'm always reminded there's some other form of prayer that I haven't picked up on in a long time.
Lily and Daniel, thank you so much for visiting with us.
Thanks for having me.